Welcome to episode 2 of the Introspection and Banter podcast, hosted by yours truly, Anthony, Antoine, yeah.
And Gabriel, Gabe.
All right, so quick update. I have access to YouTube. Gabe has access to Spotify. I don't know how well we did on Spotify, but the last episode on YouTube had over 20 views. Pretty good, because I thought episode 1 was good, but kind of shit. Really, two people trying to figure out, yeah, we should make a podcast, but what should it be about? I don't know. Let's just start it from there.
Yeah.
Did it work? No, it didn't work, but a lot of people were like, what the hell is this? some updates. If you want to shoot any topics or feedback, you can shoot them to our Gmail that we've created, intro.banter@gmail.com. Any things, you know, welcome. We're not looking for any guests right now. If we are, we'll probably hit you up. Ain't gonna lie.
We're desperate.
What do you mean? All right. The other thing I wanted to mention was... Actually, I don't remember what the other thing I wanted to mention was.
I believe we also just wanted to just give a thanks for anyone who did leave us, like, any feedback.
That's true, yes. Also, thanks for, like, listening to the last episode. The other thing I wanted to mention was the last episode was very unfocused. But, like I said, that's just two people trying to make a podcast. And we're like, let's just ad-lib it.
Yeah.
We want to do topics going this point forward. And tonight's topic will be... What was tonight's topic, Gabe?
Tonight's topic is on inspiration. Specifically, like, artistic inspiration.
That is right.
Yeah. So, Anthony, you want to take it off for tonight? What inspires you? We mentioned this in the last episode, I think, if I didn't cut it out, that we both do a little bit of writing. We're both English majors.
Yes, yes. So. We both did go to school for the English. For some of us, that's our second language. Mm. Not me. what inspires me? I think something that touches on a deeper level, like the sort of stuff you don't see talked about all the time, like in your normal day, but like you connect with it, but everyone kind of connects with it, but you relate to it more, and it's something not everyone wants to mention. And with me, that would be this book by author Ned Vizzini. It's kind of a funny story, and he talks about his time in high school. He had a lot of issues with taking all advanced classes and struggling to keep up with it all, and then getting into drugs and his, like, dealing with relationships and that kind of drama, and how he wanted to commit suicide. And then he stays at a mental hospital and gets help eventually. The book does take a more joyful turn, but yeah. I really loved it, and it has inspired, like, some of, like, what I talk about and write about.
Yeah? What way?
I mean, with it. I had never got to writing this story, but there was one that I had considered writing about, which was two best friends, and one of them kills himself, and, like, how the other friend has to deal with it. And I was thinking, like, maybe, like, he killed himself because of bullying or something. And, like, how he has to deal with it. And, like, he still goes to school with the bullies. And it's created this internal struggle for him in, like, what he wants to do. And, like should he, like, seek out revenge or something? Like, what should he be doing?
Mm. You know what? I think I remember you mentioning this to me back when we were still living together. This specific, like, story. Okay, yeah. Never actually got written out.
Yeah, I do that a lot.
No, I do the same thing, too. Actually, I was going to point out, like, I think we both have the same issue where it's like, we'll get an idea for something. We may or may not, like, actually go through with it.
That's true. I mean, it's a lot of work. Dedication, I think, is part of it. And finding time to get this story written out. And is it what you, like, pictured? Because that is the thing. Sometimes you're writing the story and it's not what you initially pictured. And sometimes it's a good thing, but not always. Yeah.
Sometimes you put your pen to a paper or finger to a keyboard and, like, as you're writing something out or drafting something out, it slowly starts to like change shape in a way that you didn't really intend it to. Sometimes you really like where it goes, and sometimes you just stare at the page and you're just like, I'm gonna scrap this whole fucking thing.
True that.
Yeah, it's I know for me that happens a lot. Like a lot of the stories that I start writing, I end up just like dumping them in like a trash folder because I just hate how they like how they turn out.
I know what you mean. And like the hardest part can be like the opening and stuff like that.
Oh my
god. The opening is the biggest thing. It's what draws the person in and keeps them hooked, keeps them going. Which is part of why I like that Ned Vizzini book, because it starts off with him saying like he wants to commit suicide. And then you go back a couple months to like when the shit starts, and then you're back at present day, and the book just rolls with it from there.
And openings are always very important, because not only does it like you said, grab the reader, but also it also gives you a tone, sets a tone for the rest of the story and what the reader.
Oh
can
yeah, yeah, and I know what you mean.
You're talking about that one. I think my favorite like opening of all time has got to be from Don Quixote. You know, it's like en un lugar, you know, in some place in La Mancha, whose name I don't want to remember, is like just those lines like add that layer of mystery, which becomes a major theme of like both volumes. It's like history, how it's recorded, how accurate it is. You don't even know like where Don Quixote comes from. We just assume that the writer, like the narrator, is telling us what he's telling us is accurate, but we're not sure if it is.
Oh, I didn't know. Yeah, I don't know too much about Don Quixote.
You should read it. Very good. And I'm not just saying that out of Spanish pride. I'm just saying.
I was going to say, is the English one good too?
There's some pretty decent translations. I don't like the, funny enough, I don't like the English translation of the opening that sometimes they use.
Yeah.
In the Spanish, en un lugar just means in some place. In the English translation, they do translate in some village for some reason.
Yeah. And would you say he's from La Mancha?
La Mancha, literally the stain. But
I was gonna say, like, I've heard like the, I don't know if it's like a phrase or something. The man of La Mancha.
Yeah, the man of La Mancha, because La Mancha is literally where he's from.
Okay, that makes sense.
An actual place in Spain, by the way. If you go there, all you see is like Don Quixote oriented stuff because they're just cashing in on the tourism.
Yeah. What do you think about bleak realism?
Bleak realism. Define that for me.
I mean, like, part of the reason I liked Ned Vizzini's book, and like I said, like it inspired like some of my other like writing and like stuff I seek out, was I am a fan of like something that's realistic but with like a dark undertone.
I enjoy those types of stories. I think because when you grow up watching, I guess, Christian media like I did as a kid,
yeah,
or listening to Christian music, it's always super positive. And I don't mean to come off like as an edgelord or anything, but it's just like you get tired of that shit, you know?
Cause yes, I do.
You live life and like it's not like that at all, you know?
Yes, as both of us being young adults in America, life is college. Not a Disney movie.
College debt.
Yes, college debt. Finding a secure job.
Waking up every morning, taking like checking what hurts today. Should I take a pill today to get out of bed?
Get a caffeine IV.
Is tonight the night I finally get like a normal sleep, or is my Fitbit gonna tell me I stayed up for like an hour for some reason? that's my like every night. Life is not a great experience. And I think what I like about like what you said, like bleak realism, is like that type of art does give us an insight into like sometimes we don't want to face like a reality, right? We don't want to think about like how shitty life is, but it's good to have like that in our face, like that thrown in our face every now and then, to like, yeah, this is what life really is like. There's nothing wrong with escapism, right? But there's also nothing wrong, I think, with just coming to terms with the fact that, you know, life fucking sucks sometimes.
I think too, with like that sort of life sucks sometimes, and like looking at that like bleak realism thing, is it kind of reminds me of like how much like someone that's reading it, how much they've grown. Like maybe you started off like you were a dirt poor person as a child, and like you're living it up, like you have a bunch of friends now, and like bleak realism just kind of like puts you back like, well, yeah, that used to be me, like that was my life, but I'm happy. I'm like, not that I've grown so much.
Yeah, it could be a positive experience. Like, hey, I've been there and I grew out of it. I'm sure there are other people. Now I know that there are other people who've had a similar experience to me, you know?
Yeah.
Like it kind of validates you in a way. Like, I'm not the only one who's gone through this sort of thing. This guy also has gone through this sort of thing. You know, he's read a book. And other people are reading this book, so clearly maybe they're going through the same sort of thing as I went through.
Through that.
And we were talking about, like, we're on the topic of realism. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny, because you were talking about how that inspires your writing. For me, yeah. I think we've talked about this just outside of the podcast. Most of my stories have to do with, like, the escape, not confronting reality, but escaping from it. Like, most of my protagonists are usually people going through, like, the stages of ennui, and they find something to escape from it.
Like, they're stuck in a, like, what? Can you go into detail?
Yeah, well, like, yeah, there's a character I've developed for a while, appeared in some of the scraps of my stories, who is, like, all of us, young adult, doesn't know what he's going to do with his life. But his story involves rejecting, like, the boring world set in front of him. Because I don't know if you've read a lot of my stories, but mostly fantasy is what I write.
Yeah, I have read some of it. I do know it's fantasy. I remember the one had a talking cat.
Oh, yes, I remember that one.
And it was, like, I don't know, like, magical, some of it.
Yeah, so most of my stuff is literally people escaping from, like, the world of the mundane and entering the world of the fantastical.
Yeah.
I know for me, it's, because for me, my biggest inspiration was Blake's poetry and his whole mythos that he made up of a world that was, like, seen beyond, that was beyond what we normally see. Even, like, his mythology, how he described God using, like, Urizen as, like, a stand-in for him, like, the god of the physical realm who kind of entrapped all this great spiritualness and put it in physical form, but that mankind longed to separate from it. It's very Gnostic, really, like early yeah. Gnostic Christian. The idea that we're trapped in this physical realm, we got to go beyond that, like, get the knowledge to, like, rejoin, like, the elevated realm that's beyond the physical.
Inception.
For me, yeah.
No, what were you going to say?
Yeah, for me, well, like, reading Blake's works like that, especially since everything's, it's hard to, like, understand him sometimes because everything's behind a metaphor, but the idea of, like, rejecting, like, what has been set out in front of you, like, okay, this is what God is, this is the religion you're going to follow, this is all the rules you're going to follow in this society, and Blake's just like, nah, I reject all that. Here's my own mythology, here's my own prophecies. I'm going to put them all in this big poem, and no one's going to understand what the hell I'm talking about. They're going to spend, like, decades trying to figure out what I'm trying to say. And that, for me,
I was going to say, I do like that, like, thought that, like, his mind, like, the way it worked like that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's like, even outside of, like, his work, right?
Yeah.
He was, like, such a weirdo, too. He would, like,
I know. Like, I remember he didn't like working, so, like, he didn't have a job, but he was, like, an artist, and, like, he would write stuff, and these are maybe something that you should have a job to, you know, help support you financially.
He would take, like, commissions to, like, do artwork. I think he did, like, I have a copy of Paradise Lost with, like, one of his drawings on top of it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he did drawings for Paradise Lost. I'm pretty sure he worked for at one point, did artwork for writing of Shelby's mom. You know, Mary Shelby's mom, I think.
Mary Shelley's mom?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was known, actually, before he became known as an author, he was known as an artist. Like, he had a small following of, like, people who liked his artwork.
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. While he was alive, and then, like, way after he passed away is when, like, people actually started to recognize his work as, oh, hey, you should probably recognize this guy as one of the great pre-romantics.
I do have two things I want to ask mm-hmm. you about. I mean, the one's not even a question. It's more just that I didn't know you knew so much about Blake and, like, in general. Mm-hmm. Like, I figured you knew a little bit about him, but, like, when you went into the detail about his mythos, I was like, oh, snap, you know your stuff.
Dude,
I do want to know, does your like of Blake and this whole like creation of his like fantasy and stuff like that, does that tie into how much you enjoy Lovecraft?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's, you know, it's funny. Lovecraft, yeah. The whole, at the heart of Lovecraft mythos is that cosmic cynicism, the idea that, you know, we as a people, as a species, humanity, is nothing in the grand scheme of the cosmos, and that there are things that go on without any input from us.
Okay.
Physical, you know, the scientific realm here. We, not only do we not matter, it's just that we most likely will not comprehend things outside of what we can normally experience, you know, as just limited humans.
Are you saying, like, we're just, like, a small speck?
Yeah. So, right, that, and we belong in our own little corner of gathering, like, with the other pieces, the other specks of dust, you know?
Okay.
Every human that goes beyond that, like, tries to understand more, get a bigger grasp of the cosmos, or encounters things that are beyond his, like, capacity, they all go insane.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point. Which is funny, because you could argue that's like the opposite of what I believe in. With Blake, it's like, here, you have to look beyond what the physical realm is. Whereas Lovecraft is like, you better know your fucking place. They're I guess in that regard, they're opposites. But to me, I've enjoyed both of their works. I guess I just like the idea of the reminder that mankind isn't hot shit like it sometimes thinks it is.
Yeah.
And then with Blake, I just love, like, the rebellious nature of Blake was, because really, I think someone pointed out that Blake really had his own form of Christianity. You could call it like a cult of one, just Blake.
No, I am familiar a little bit with what you mean. Like, the dude pretty much just like made up like more and more stuff. He's like, yeah, God and Jesus, like he had his own variations of like what they meant.
He took Milton's poem. He made his own poem called Milton, and the whole thing was like, yeah, Jesus, God clearly inspired Milton to write this poem, but he didn't write everything he needed to write down, so I'm going to finish it for him, essentially. And that was his poem, Milton.
That is amusing.
I
haven't read Paradise Lost, but I'm interested in reading Milton just to see, like, what this guy just added on. Like, that's like someone saying, oh, yeah, J.K. Rowling did not finish Harry Potter, clearly. I'm going to finish it. Are you familiar with Shelley? Like, Percy Shelley? Not a
Percy Shelley. Mary Shelley's husband, right?
Yeah.
Not too much. The most I know is literally that he was Mary Shelley's husband.
I was going to say, like, one of my favorite poems was written by him. I think it's called Ozymandias or something like that.
Oh, I have read Ozymandias. Ozymandias. I've heard, like, multiple pronunciations of it. It's the one where he travels to Egypt, no?
Yeah, yeah. A traveler goes to Egypt, and he comes across a sign, like a stone sign, and it says, like, welcome to, like, the kingdom of Ozymandias. Like, look at the, like, vast miles of, like, everything I own. And it's literally just the sign. Everything else is desert.
Yeah, like, his statue's not even, like, fully erect anymore. It's, like, partially broken. If I'm not mistaken, it's, gaze upon my works and weep or something like that. And, it's, like, there's nothing to gaze at. It's, like,
yeah, you know, that's, man, the sort of realism, like, sometimes I enjoy. Because, like, the poem's saying, like, yet nothing's forever.
Yeah. You may be glorious now, but, like, it's gonna go away eventually. That's what I love so much about, also, you've been around me long enough to know that I really love listening to metal. And one of my favorite bands is Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, Bruce Dickinson, the lead singer of Iron Maiden, is a very big William Blake fan.
Oh.
He made a whole album heavily inspired by, like, Blake's poems called The Chemical Wedding. But I was going to say, they have a song called, Alexander the Great. And it's literally, like, it talks about all the great feats that Alexander the Great did in his life. The chorus changes every time, too. So it's like, Alexander the Great, he became a legend amongst men. Alexander the Great,
Once you mention the chorus is different, it sounds familiar.
Yeah, and the ending chorus is, Alexander the Great, he died of a fever in Babylon, and that's like the ending of a song. Like all the great shit that Alexander the Great did, and then at the end he died of like sickness, not even like in battle or anything.
Yeah, I know he died in his 30s.
Yeah, I know some people think he got poisoned or something, but I think more investigations revealed that, more recent investigations, I'd say, revealed that it might have been typhoid fever, something similar.
Probably. I don't know. It's like crazy. Like, I saw something the one day. Like, there's I think like 80 cities or something like that named after him.
Yeah.
By the way, I found that line you were talking about, okay? And it says, "My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains."
Except like a broken statue and a plaque.
Yeah, it says, "Round the decay of the colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away."
It's like,
"Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert."
Yeah, mankind ain't shit. it's always great. No, it's always great to have that little dose, that reminder, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the old ghost song, Pro Memoria, goes, "Don't forget about your friend death. Don't forget that you will die." And it's true, you know? I think that's one of the great things about, like, art in general, is that it can remind us of things we try to forget sometimes, bring certain topics up to the forefront.
Yeah.
Our hubris being one of the many things I think mankind tends to forget a lot. I know we've talked about me.
Like, what other stuff inspired me? I'm not sure.
I think probably also you think humans in general are like a summary of their experiences as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I think it's not just like what you consume media wise that kind of plays a hand in how you, since we're talking on the topic of writing specifically, what type of author you become, but also like memories, past experiences,
the environment.
Yeah, the environment you grew up in, I think, plays a big part. I think one of the reasons, maybe, I think one of the big reasons why my whole thing, why I enjoy escapism and fantasy, is because we grew up like in a very strict Christian household.
Yeah.
You want to run away, so to speak, mentally at least. Things you weren't allowed to do, you end up doing when you run away for college, for instance. And I think part of that eventually just goes into your writing too.
I know what you mean. I don't know. I wouldn't say Breaking Bad was like inspirational to me, but like I write a lot of anti-heroes into my own work. Like that is like always where I start, because I have this thing where I don't believe in anyone being the perfect hero.
Which is very realistic of you.
Yeah, it is realistic.
Only I think in literature will you ever find like good and bad people. When it comes to like real life, it's always, you know, more complicated than
gray. Bunch of gray.
Yeah. Varying shades of gray. I know for my writing too, we were talking about like, you were talking specifically about a story I shared with you.
Yeah.
About the talking cat. And you know the funny thing about that story is that I did not intend that story to be fantasy. When people people kept telling me like that's an interesting fantasy story. It's like, that's what people are getting out of it, fantasy? Because for me, that was a sci-fi story where you had like an alien cat species that could talk, but then like the other person that was like the other protagonist character that was in the story, I think a lot of people assumed it was human, but that wasn't the point. Like he wasn't at all. And I think I maybe mentioned this like once or twice that it like described them where he clearly didn't have human features, but I don't think anyone picked up on that when I showed it to certain people.
It sounds like one of those things like where you get feedback and you're just like, oh, I'm just gonna roll with it. Like I like where they just kind of figure it out for you. It's not what you intended, and you're like, that kind of works.
Yeah, you know the funny thing is, for me at least, I like adding like science fiction, like merging science fiction and fantasy. This because despite the how much I like writing fantasy, I don't read a lot of fantasy, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I do read a lot of science fiction. I do watch a lot of science fiction. So for me, it's like I do add those elements in, but then like you said, sometimes like people get a different, complete different interpretation of it. It's just like, well, you know what? That's actually 10 times better than what I had in mind. Let me write that down real quick, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I had a couple writing classes in college.
Yeah, I think we were in one of them together.
Yes, we were. Although, I don't think we did much writing in that class.
It was a very disappointing class, to say the least.
Yes, true that.
Yeah. But no, that brings me to another like very important thing. Getting people to look at your work.
Yeah. What do you mean?
You really, it's always great to have like a small group. If you don't want to have like a big group of people, but small group of people, they could be fellow writers as well. You can help each other to look at each other's work in drafts, like set like, what they called, set prompts for each other, for lack of a better term. Look at each other's works, not just like proofreading, but actually give feedback on ideas, stylistic choices, why you like this, what you didn't like about that. Because chances are people are going to like say something about your story that maybe you realize, I should probably change that because people are misinterpreting this. And
it's always going to happen.
Yeah, it's always going to happen. Because here's the thing. Once you write something and you put it in the hands of someone else, you no longer have that control, right?
That's true. Unless you're telling it to them, explaining all their questions, and that's just not writing anymore.
Yeah, at that point, storytelling. Like, very interactive storytelling.
Yeah.
Like, giving someone your work and having, letting, like, better if they read it with you not in the room, I think.
Yeah. It's also funny, too. Have you ever, like, read a story and you realize something isn't the way you were interpreting it?
I had that experience, like, a couple years ago when I watched the movie adaptation of Harmony.
Yeah.
Where in Harmony, there's, like, three girls. I remember reading it. They were friends. Or at least I thought they were friends. And then the movie portrayed them as lovers, and I was confused as to whether or not I misread something.
Yeah, I remember you told me about that. You were like, yeah, they made them lovers. I was like, there's, like, literally one scene that's maybe sexual, and it's not even sexual.
Yeah. I was very confused. I had to. I was going to go reread the book to see if I missed something, but I ended up just putting it on my shelf.
I mean, heck, I read it and I told you there was nothing.
Right? Like, it was like, I was confused. I was like, huh. But hey, that shit happens.
Yeah. They probably just changed it for, you know, they're like, oh, this will be way more interesting.
This would be a much more tragic tale.
Yeah, that's their interpretation of it.
Oh my god.
What were you about to say, though? Do you remember before I kind of changed it?
What were we talking about? People having their own interpretations of your work.
Yeah.
That can either be that could help you greatly.
Yeah, you said they should go out of the room.
Yeah, well, like, I know for one of my writing group circles, right, we would have the story written, like, 2 weeks in advance before we actually discussed it together. So people had 2 weeks to read it on their own. We didn't talk about it. You didn't ask any questions to the writer or anything. Then we had, like, maybe 10-15 minutes of people talking and going around, saying what they thought about the story, corrections that they think that should be corrected, errors and things like that. And then at the end of that, can the author then go ahead and bring up their own suggestions? Or rather, explanations and ask questions. Which I thought was a great idea, because I got to see an unfiltered like look at what everyone thought about my story. Which, like I said, was surprising for me when people said, huh, I don't usually like reading fantasy, but this was an interesting fantasy story. And I'm just sitting there like, how did I miss the ball so far?
That is funny. I know what you mean a little bit, though, from my own classes. When we did workshops, they would always make whoever wrote the story just sit there and watch as they discussed it. And then at the end, you got your own mention of, like, what's going on. And then oftentimes you're having to explain things like, oh, no, like, that's not what I meant. They're like, oh, yeah, like, that, I thought this was so cool, or I didn't get this. It's like, well, that's, you interpreted wrong. I mean, although it's hard to say you interpreted wrong.
Yeah, sometimes it's not so much.
Subjective. Maybe I should have wrote it better.
Yeah, so I was going to say, sometimes you just don't write as well as you think you did.
Yeah.
And then it's like, like writing a story and somehow not getting across that neither character is human. Like I did in that story somehow. And you guys, well, I should probably add more detail to that.
Were the characters not human and they thought they were?
It was so, okay, so you read the story I'm talking about specifically.
Yeah, the one character was human, the other was a cat.
Hey, no, the character was not human, that's what I'm saying.
Oh.
Character, he was a Glassian. The term I came up with was a Glassian. I don't think I used it in the actual story, but he was not human. Now I'm even more dejected because clearly I didn't explain that well enough.
Human-like?
It was humanoid.
Okay.
More so than the cat.
No, like when I read it, I was definitely picturing human and a cat.
I'm like 99% sure I wrote a specific line where like I mentioned his tendril grabbed something. So
probably not the one I read.
No, it was the one you read.
Really?
Yeah, I may have not included it. That's probably what it was. I do want to add that story was mostly written in a night, so there's things I probably don't remember.
Yeah. One thing that I always like think about, like in terms of like sharing stories, is you're asking someone for like when you give them it to read and you're asking for criticism, you should pick certain things you want them to criticize about it.
That's true.
So they're not looking for anything. Like, so you have feedback on stuff you want to know about. Like, did I do this right? Like this tone, do you think it works well?
And when you when you're building your circle, you can also look for people who do that. If you notice that this person focuses a lot on critiquing your characters, then you might want to have that person in the group and then get someone else who's like really good with grammar, who looks at stuff like that, who's going to correct your grammar when they look at your story. Maybe someone who's really good at looking at pacing, things like that. You build a group of people that can actually like help take apart your story and give you proper feedback on it.
That is true.
I know, in that sense, I guess now we're on the part of the top podcast where we're just talking about writing.
We just divulged from inspiration writing. Although I figured at some point we're probably going to come back to inspiration, but we're just like on this own tangent, riding the wave.
Yeah, well, allow me to make that transition. I was going to say, back on the topic of gathering inspiration, right? Sometimes you get hit with inspiration just randomly in everyday life. Maybe something just happens and, I just had an idea. And not necessarily just for writing, but just in general, hey, yeah, I got an idea. I think one of the most important things to have on your person, if you're any sort of artist, is a notebook, right? Because when that moment of inspiration hits you, you're going to want to write that down. Because the worst thing, and I've felt it many times, is when you get an idea, you don't write it down. Then come an hour or two later when you actually have like a computer or a piece of paper in front of you, you hit blanks. You don't remember anything at all, or you lost like that little spark of creativity. It's gone.
That is the worst.
Yeah. At least with like the little notebook, you can write like one or two things down, like, remember blah, 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 this, things like that. And then maybe like when you're home or anything, you're going to sit down, maybe do some writing, maybe do some painting. Or whatever it is you want to create, you pop open your little notebook, like you know that little spark that hit you like earlier today is like, oh yeah, I remember that. That's an interesting idea. Let me go off on that and see what I can do. It works. Like this is not like a new piece of advice, by the way. Like I think a lot of writers talk about like how they have like these little notebooks that they keep on them. Going back to one of my favorite authors, Lovecraft has like had a notebook with like a bunch of like little tidbits, some of them which became stories, a lot of them which stayed in his notebook or became partial stories.
Were his notebooks published?
I think at one point his little like I forget what they called it, little notebook, like it's like idea book, did get published in something. I know certain authors, like Lovecraftian authors, have taken some of his ideas from that book and just created their own from it too.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, well, it's like, it's great to have. It's always great to have that little, like, pocketbook. I carry one sometimes. I think you've seen, like, me have a notebook on my person. Not always, but I try to keep one.
I was gonna say, I don't know. I'm, like, thinking about, like, when I knew you. I don't exactly recall, like...
I was gonna
like,
say,
did you have one, like, in college?
I had, like, two. Remember that Hatsune Miku notebook I had in my room?
Yeah.
And then an even smaller, like, little notebook with purses and boots on it.
No, I mean, I don't remember that one. I do remember Hatsune Miku one. That definitely sounds familiar.
That's what the Hatsune Miku one was for. I think the notebook little purse is one I kept in my other apartment. Mm. Funny enough, I found both of those notebooks while unpacking earlier today.
Nice.
So now, I hate it. I have my books.
Okay. I said I hate it when you remember that you had an idea like an hour ago and you're just thinking like, that was such a good idea. Like, what? Like, I need to remember this idea again. It was genius.
This is not the greatest, best song in the world. This is the best song in the world's tribute.
That is basically the summary of that issue.
Yeah. It sucks. I'm pretty sure, maybe not everyone who's listening does writing, but I'm pretty sure other things you do, whether it be like painting or whatever, making music, I'm sure you feel the same way too sometimes, right, guys? You don't have to answer me now. I'll pretend that you said yes.
Not all at once.
Yeah, no, don't speak all at once. It's hard to hear. But yeah, like it sucks when that happens and it's sad. It makes me want to cry. Makes me feel like the guy at the beginning of your book, Anthony.
Oh yeah.
It's all part of the process of like writing, or creating, I should say. Creating art. You're going to get like, you're going to create ideas. Some of them are going to work out. Some of them are going to disappear. If I'm not mistaken, there is a famous poem literally about a guy. A guy got high, started writing. Someone interrupted him and the poem ended there.
Yo, wait, really?
Yeah, it's...
You're going to have to send that to me after this.
I forget. It's one of the guys who wrote lyrical ballads. I'm pretty sure it's the same guy who wrote Rime of the Ancient Mariner. I'm forgetting his name at the moment. But there is a poem. That poem, literally, he got high, started writing it. Someone interrupted, knocked on his door and interrupted him, and he lost like the train of thought. And so he had to finish the poem then and there.
Mm. What else did you have on a gathering... freaking
inspiration?
Yeah, inspiration.
Read.
Like, what the hell's the word? Read.
Yeah, consume other media. You are gonna learn.
I'll agree with that.
To learn. Specifically, I'm talking about writing. But the best way to learn about writing, and this applies to other stuff, is to experience others. You want to become an artist?
Consume media.
Consume other art. You're gonna pick up skills and traits from them that you may not have thought on your own. Same with like writing. Read more. To learn how writers write. If you want to become a filmmaker, you're obviously gonna have to watch films,
and also I mean dabble a little bit in other mediums too.
Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised. Like I definitely want to say that my skill with writing characters probably improved when I started playing Dungeons and Dragons and seeing how people interacted with one another. Not even like the aspect of storytelling in that game, but literally just seeing, like, actually having like a group of friends to talk to made me understand how like human interaction works. Because there, when it comes to like writing characters, you want to have like realistic interactions, not like like very weirdly written dialogue that doesn't sound human, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
For me, that helped. I don't know. Did you do anything that helped you with, like, your writing, Anton?
I'm trying to think of a specific. I'm not sure. Anything that helped me with my writing? Gosh, I don't know. I can't think of anything specific right now.
Yeah, well, think of that. Experience is stuff. Essentially what I'm trying to get across is talk to people, learn how they act, go outside, see how nature is, how the world is, how it runs. It's a great, and I think, like, experience is a great, like, I think I mentioned earlier, experience is very important for, specifically a writer, but I guess also for any other like artists of any other medium. It's very important to have world experience. I think that might be why I like learning, like, about other languages, you know? Because when you learn about other languages, you gotta learn the culture anyway. So learning how, like, different people throughout different parts of the world act, what they believe in, what their culture is, I think, really opens your eyes to, like, different things. I know for me, but since I like writing fantasy, one of the things is you gotta create, like, different fantasy races, you know? And you have to sit down and say, well, how what's this creature, these group of creatures, what are they like? What do they do? Do they have a religion? How do they talk? Do they have a specific language? Do they act a certain way? Do they do this? Do they do that at this time of the year? Things like that. When you actually, like, have gone and, like, actually taken the time to learn about how other, like, step outside of, like, what you know and have, like, experienced other, maybe not firsthand, but at least learn about other people, then it becomes easier for you to write, like, things like that. At least that's how I feel in my experience. I don't know if you have a different experience in those things or if you agree.
I do agree. Yeah.
But it's important.
Gosh. Anything else we should talk about?
On this topic? Not on the top of my head, ironically.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. You think we should end it then?
Yeah, I think we've gotten a great gist of what, at least I think we've gotten our opinions across on how to deal with inspiration. Had a bit of a non sequitur just talking about our favorite authors, talking about different things. But I think for the most part, I think we had a great discussion today.
All right, guys, that's all for tonight's episode of the Introspection and Banter podcast. I've been your host, Anthony Antoine.
And I'm Gabriel Gabe.
So if you guys have any feedback you want to give us, any questions for future topics, you know our Gmail at intro.banter@gmail.com. If you're listening to us on Spotify, check out our YouTube. It's the same shit, but subscribe. You know, it helps us see our view count. At least I can see the view count on there. And if you're listening to us on YouTube, get a Spotify, you heathen. What are you doing? Not playing. We're also on Spotify, though.
Yep.
All right, so I hope y'all have a good night. Anything you want to say, Gabe?
Just want to thank everyone for coming by.
Yep. I thought this was a pretty good episode. I love you all. I hope you have a good night.